Welcome to In the Green Room. I'm Kinga.
And I'm Chet.
And this is Martin. Welcome, welcome, welcome.
Welcome in the Green Room, Tosh.
Yes, thank Tosh. Thank you for being here,
man. You're an entrepreneur. Do you want to give yourself a little introduction and tell everybody who you are and what you do?
Sure. So, Tosh Semlacher. I own a media company and a consulting company in analytics for baseball, primarily right now. So, the media company is called Momentum, and the consulting company is called 4UP Sports. So,
sounds like a good time.
Yeah. And what's your background? Because you're the American dream.
Oh, yeah. No, I got a big background when it comes to that. Sure. Originally from Canada. Was born in Calgary, Alberta.
Mm-hmm. Been there. Love it.
Yeah. It's a great place. Mm-hmm. It's very beautiful.
Very beautiful.
Moved to Canada? Yeah, I do. It's a very beautiful place. I'm happy to be here, though. I can say that much.
Is it America number one?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, especially during COVID, it was so locked down up there.
It still is.
You couldn't do anything up there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I got a lot of family in Saskatchewan that are still deal with that.
Damn, that's terrible.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, I'm sure we'll get into it. I'm very happy to be here.
Cheers to you being American.
Thank you. I can't wait to hear kind of the differences, because I've been up to Canada as a tourist several times. Love it. Mm-hmm. And everyone seems so nice. But I also watch Canadian comedy, and there's some aggressiveness under there.
Yeah, no, it's it's one of those things. It's a very beautiful place to visit. Mm-hmm. It's very nice. I'm always very happy to come back. Mm-hmm. To the United States. I became a citizen in a year ago, basically.
How long did that take?
That's awesome.
I moved here when I was 7, and then you go through that whole process. Usually it takes about 7 years to mm-hmm. become a green card holder. And then I was a green card holder until I was basically became a citizen. But that I had the opportunity to become a citizen when I was 23. Mm-hmm. Because I was still playing, doing a bunch of stuff. It was pretty busy.
Baseball.
And I was still trying to figure out that stuff, so I didn't really – the change really didn't – merit, like the juice wasn't worth the squeeze at that point.
Right. It takes a lot of time,
takes a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And so at a certain point, me and my parents were just like, hey, let's move forward with this. So we all kind of had the same immigration lawyer. We all did it. I had moved to Arizona at that point.
By the way, he's very close with his parents, and I love that.
I am. Mm-hmm. That's all we got when we moved. So it was my parents and then my sister, and they're all in Washington now. Mm-hmm. So I moved away from Washington 2 years ago, came here. But yeah, that whole process was cool. Did the interview. Did a few, they give you 100 questions to study, mm-hmm. and then you have to get 6 out of 10, right? Mm-hmm. So, got all 6.
Well, we love talking to entrepreneurs here in the Green Room, because mm-hmm. it both inspires listeners, and it's like a good plug for your business.
Sure.
So, what led to you starting your own business with both the media company and the analytics company?
The biggest thing for me was, before I got to kind of this space where having my own businesses, I was building things for other people. Mm-hmm. And I believe very heavily in what we were doing. It was a company called Driveline Baseball. They're based in Seattle.
Driveline Baseball. And that's where you met your partner.
That's where I met my business partner. Yep. And so we were training there at the same time.
Can we see his name?
Trevor Bauer.
Okay. Yep.
And so we were able to, basically that's where we started talking a lot about the future. We started talking a lot about, where the game was going, what we wanted to do with it, mm-hmm. Whether it be branding, analytics, consulting. We do a lot of physiological analysis. So that's gut health tests, blood tests. We have our facility where it's the recovery room.
Oh, talk about that. That was so interesting. Oh, yeah. I'd like Chet and Martin to get a tour of that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And then
easy enough.
We can dip them in the cold and the hot.
In the cold tub, yeah.
So tell us a little bit.
So with that room, it really does serve as a very kind of central piece as to what 4UP does. They call me the king of analogies, because that's the way I kind of describe things. Is like I think of comparisons, and then it makes it easier for me to understand.
I love it.
So when it comes to performance and elite athletes or elite athletics in general, they usually the way that you productize that to the world is you kind of serve the cake at the end. Mm-hmm. For us, I wanted to focus on the ingredients before that. So there's pitch design, there's biomechanical analysis, there's a lot of other things that when you're on the field, that's you can actually push that forward, mm-hmm. and that's the end. There's a lot of ingredients that come before that that make you capable of doing that. So that's where physiological kind of tracking comes into play, wellness questionnaires, like nutrition, hydration. There's a lot of things like that. We only drink like alkalized water. We have a filter throughout our facility called Aquasana that filters all of our water. Then when it comes to the recovery room, we have our Zero Body.
Tell them about that. I found that really
interesting. That's basically it's a waterless float tank. It has water in it, but it's more like it's a really fancy waterbed. It comes from Italy, and it makes you completely weightless, and it's got a lot of cool colors and all that stuff. And so You go in, you can do it for 11 minutes, 21 minutes, or 31 minutes. And then we have a red light therapy system that kind of comes down on top of that. And that kind of helps with muscle generation, recovery. That's kind of our main focus.
So you mentioned that baseball players are kind of your main focus, but it sounds like a lot of this facility would be applicable to any athlete. So are you kind of open to other athletes as well using the facility and these like health benefits?
In some capacity, we do. So Tim Naiman, who's our director of athletic performance for 4App Sports,
I met Tim.
You met Tim? Mm-hmm. Really smart guy. He was a chemist at Coors mm-hmm. for a while. Biggest chemist I think I've ever seen. We got him a white coat to put on when we did our chili pepper challenge because it looked funny. He's just massive. He's worked with NFL guys. He's got a few guys, Dan Skipper with the Lions. I know he talks about him all the time. A lot of soccer players, softball players. The main thing for us, we want it to be exclusive for the sake that we want it to be a safe place for people to come and have open conversations and be mm-hmm. kind of like a think tank. So we didn't want it to be, we have 15-year-olds running around kind of having to limit what we could talk about versus, mm-hmm. or just outside of that, people who just pay a lot of money to be in there and not actually fit the culture. So everything we're building is strictly culture-based. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things that I'm really...
Define culture-based.
Culture-based is that you aren't making decisions based off of money. You know, I don't have to worry about keeping the lights on. I can decide who's in our building and who's not. And I don't have to be like, okay, you're paying a certain amount of money to be here, but you don't fit the right culture with, whether it be, you know, just being a good dude or mm-hmm. a nice lady, being respectful. You know, we all clean up after ourselves. It's a pretty autonomous place. Everyone we come through is kind of like an innovative thinker. Mm-hmm. We have some Frank people. There's a guy named Eric Sim, who I've known for a very long time.
Is that the skater?
No.
Wait, who's the skater?
So that was kind of like the skateboarder.
Oh, yeah.
So that was kind of the inspiration for the whole thing. Rob Dyrdek, for me, like the Fantasy Factory, that was kind of like my biggest thing. We wanted to build a fantasy factory for professional athletes. Mm-hmm. We wanted people to be able, when they come to Scottsdale, and, you know, we're in a cool place by a bunch of cars, we're car people, we have a lot of other things, we got a big facility. So it makes it, you know, you want to have a cool place to come hang out.
Right.
And, you know, talk about the future of things. And so that's really the biggest thing we wanted to do is really, we built this to help shape the future. And we want to empower a lot of the people specifically in baseball right now. And then as things grow, other sports, other kind of innovative people, and move from there.
So you mentioned a lot of like recovery technology there. Is there also a lot of training equipment too, or is it more just only based on recovery?
No, we have a full gym.
Okay, cool.
We have 3 full racks.
That's awesome.
A bunch of other stuff like that. We have a cage that we do all of our content in. We wanted to build a gym inside of a content studio. So anything that occurs, we wanted to be able to record it. We wanted to be able to somehow present it to the world in a way. A lot of the inspiration from this comes from the early days at Driveline, where it would be, you know, I didn't really have much business sitting around a table with like future Cy Young winner, a couple of guys that, you know, played in the major leagues for 10 plus years, a few other guys. It was a really ragtag group of people. Mm-hmm. And the conversations of what we're having, you know, some of these young kids that were there too, I have a couple of buddies now. One's the youngest major league assistant coach ever. And then another one is the minor league coordinator for the Dodgers. Mm-hmm. And they're both the youngest in their craft. And they were 18, 19, sitting around this table with a bunch mm-hmm. of 25-year-olds, 30-year-olds. And they were learning from these conversations. And we always said, like, I wish we filmed that. Because we were like, that would have been better for the public. And we could refine it. Obviously, you edit it, make sure that it's, like, safe to put out there anyways, mm-hmm. right? But that was really the main reason or main inspiration for doing that is there's a lot of conversations that we were privy to mm-hmm. and we really enjoyed and people didn't believe we had. They're right. Expanding certain things to, you know, I was a big international expansion guy in my former job. I'm huge about international baseball, making mm-hmm. sure that people understand where the game's going, no matter where it is. Mm-hmm. Those are conversations we had. Biomechanics in the game, pitch design, like people didn't think that we could actually formulate the best ways to create pitches. That's definitely a thing. Like Trevor was the figurehead of that. He's been doing it for years. So
he's the one that started that?
He's him and his dad.
Really?
So they're formulating the pitch for the body, I'm assuming.
So you take your natural motion. Mm-hmm. So it's like there's a lot of different metrics now. And this is where the game's going, that the technology provides you with so much information mm-hmm. that you can refine it down into, you know, if I wanted to make sure that this slider moved a certain way to an ideal point, I could adjust the spin axis. I could try to increase my spin rate. Mm-hmm. I could adjust the grip in my hand. And they've been using, say, high-speed cameras, a lot of different things like that in the game to do that. And so that's something that Trevor and his dad did way before anyone else.
Did his dad play baseball?
Oh, no.
So he just helped him with the game?
And that's why it's so fun to watch him pitch. The way he can make the ball move, oh, my God.
Yeah. So his dad...
I hate having to hit off of him.
He's an engineer in his mind. Like, the guy's a very smart guy. Both him and Trevor very much when it comes to the engineering thought. Mm-hmm. So basically, they took it on together. They're like, how do we make, you know, the future of the game better for, obviously, for Trevor's career? But mm-hmm. a lot of that stuff is what got Trevor to where he is. And so, yeah. It's very cool.
That's interesting.
That's pretty fun.
So I know you said there's a new machine that's coming?
Possibly.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So we'll that's see. A secret.
That is a secret.
Okay, okay, okay.
And I hope it works out.
Yeah. The secret machine.
Then let's not talk about that. And then can we talk a little more about Momentum Media? Is mm-hmm. So are you trying to collaborate specifically with athletes with that as well? Or is that kind of open to anybody that's
like
trying
musicians.
To make media?
Sure.
Okay.
I would say, so the way that Momentum was originally founded, it was strictly athletes, which we have definitely strayed away from now. Mm-hmm. About 6 months ago, we made a major kind of decision to change in the direction where we'd focus more on influencer kind of creator type content. That stuff's way more primed for YouTube. And also when it comes to, if there's anything we learned from COVID, is that you can't build a business around something that people have to give you access for. Mm-hmm. So working with professional athletes, MLB decides whether or not you can be on field, decides whether you can be doing a lot of stuff. So COVID made it very hard to be a part of that. So mm-hmm. if your whole business is decided around that, well, you're kind of shit out of luck.
Right.
And so we had to definitely make an adjustment. And it's more so also we started thinking about the mission of what the company is, you know, we wanted to make sure that we were empowering and educating the masses about what's fun about the game of baseball mm-hmm. and allowing it to be fun. And so that's enabled us to work with a bunch of different types of people. So different sports. We're going to work with, you know, track athletes. We're going to work with, you know.
And you ran track.
I did. Before I did baseball, I did track, did high jump.
So track athletes.
Yep. So whether it be track athletes, football players, we've had, you know, world-class strength people come mm-hmm. through. There's a weightlifting gym in Tempe called A-Lee that they had their athletes come through, and it was really cool because they had a few Olympic lifters come through and try mm-hmm. to swing a baseball, throw a baseball, or swing a bat. And so, you know, when it comes to the content, the biggest thing is we're trying to answer a lot of questions that the layman might have about baseball or, you know.
What about golf?
Golf, we do long drive content. It's all about, you know, one of our creators is huge into just literally hitting the ball as far as possible. That's how I like golf. I'm a terrible golfer, but I can drive the hell out of the ball. And so I'm needing to refine the other pieces, but that's kind of our thing is we just want to hit it as far as we can. Mm-hmm. So like long drive culture, that whole thing is kind of very much synonymous with how we are. Mm-hmm. So we've had long drivers come through. Basketball players, we've had hockey players. It is one of those things. I wouldn't be surprised if we'd have hockey players in during baseball's in season because mm-hmm. they're different off seasons. So
right.
I think that would probably be the next time we'll have hockey players in. But
yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, because it sounds like it could be a great partnership with athletes that are, you know, there's some like TikTok famous lifters and stuff that are viral for just, you know, doing crazy weird lifts and stuff. It sounds like you could potentially have your facility blow up more like on the social media aspect if you had some of them through to work out there and stuff like that.
Oh, absolutely. And that's, you know, I would say the
like
biggest...
Bradley Martin pops into my head. Yeah. He goes viral for like, he puts like girls on the bar. It's hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah. No, one of the major things I've been trying to do is to try to create a legitimate business out of being, mm-hmm. you know, a creator in the sports space. Mm-hmm. You know, you see it all the time where you have these young people who they go viral or whatever it may be, and then they have to fall into a regular life because they don't know how to repeat that success. Mm-hmm. And so it's because you actually haven't systemized being a creator,
right.
which is basically all business is making a system out of something that you give a product to. Mm-hmm. And so if your product is...
Well, and like you were saying, how like when COVID took the professional sports away, a lot of the athletes didn't have another brand going. A lot of them have that platform already to have a social media brand with merch and all that stuff. So it's just another angle they could be pursuing for more income.
Well, that's the future of everything.
They're doing the merch. Look, here's one of the newest shirts.
Yeah. That's what we do.
Do cool shite.
Do cool shit, yep.
And then what was the shirt you were wearing the day? That was a really cool one. I don't remember what it said.
Lift Big or Die.
Lift Big or Die.
Yeah, so that's one of the main, for Eric Sim, is main name, like his, stage name. It's the King of JUCO.
Okay.
So me and Eric actually played together 6-7 years ago. He's originally from Canada as well. So he's a big Korean guy, really loud, frank, bombastic dude. His content's great. Like, mm-hmm. it's a very polarizing kind of situation. But
right. So does he have a show, or what does he
Oh, he's all on YouTube.
He is a show.
He is a show.
Is he
oh,
a
yeah.
show? Okay. What does he do? I'm not
familiar. So a lot of his is like live action-based stuff. So one of the most recent things we did was we faced Rick Vaughn. So from Major League, we created his pitches in our machine. I did the haircut. I sat there and talked shit to him while I put the ball in, and then he'd have to hit off of him. And then the main goal of that content was if he'd score a run against the guy, one of his subscribers would get merchandise. And so that's kind of we interact with the subscribers that way. It's a lot of he's built himself now into people just want to see him do stuff, mm-hmm. whether it be golf, baseball. He is a very polarizing guy. I mean, swears. Why? He just swears a lot. I think that's the big thing.
Is he a comedian, too?
Oh, you could call him that. I don't think he's an informal comedian, maybe. But it's more so I think he moved from Korea to Canada. Mm-hmm. He learned a majority of English when he was 13, 14, 15. He went to junior college in Oklahoma, Kansas, one of the kind of middle of the countries, states. And, you know, when you hang out with baseball folk, you learn a different vocabulary. Mm-hmm. I mean, I deal with it all the time. Which obviously I asked whether or not I'd be allowed to swear.
Yes.
But yeah, no, he's definitely, when you watch his videos, you know, every four words is probably a swear word. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the kids, I mean, it's
a solid ratio.
It is. And the worst part, a lot of kids watch it. So we get this kind of the parents being like, I wish my kids could watch it more, but mm-hmm. we have a rule where you can't swear. Some of the parents.
That's silly.
It also forces the parents to have like legitimate conversation mm-hmm. with the kids. Like, hey, he does it. Doesn't mean you can.
Right.
So a lot of those conversations, which, mm-hmm. you know, the big thing about what we do, we have a few other creators underneath the umbrella. We have a guy named Cole, who's his stage name's Dude's a Dude, and he's more of a streamer. But his whole thing is, you know, fulfilling kind of – he wants to make everyone smile, feel good. He's definitely got that personality that makes people feel good. Mm-hmm. His streams are great. I had never been into watching Twitch, but I watch his stuff all the time. But obviously, we have Eric, more polarizing, kind of action-based stuff. We have Trevor. He does content on there. Then we have Channer Prize, who's our lead editor, but he's also a part of it.
So what kind of content does Trevor Bauer do?
So he does a lot of educational stuff. Obviously, he does live action with us. We do content where we do like 4v9, where he'd be pitching. I'll be the outfielder and infielder. And then we have Tim. He'll play first base. Mm-hmm. And then Eric will catch, where we're all mic'd up. And we faced Notre Dame High School.
Oh, so is everybody that's mic'd up and playing, are they everybody's pro?
Not everyone's pro. We just wanted to see more, like, it's one of our first videos that we put out in this, like, new model where it's like, can four grown men beat, like, a high school team in baseball?
Oh, almost cool. Like bench warmers. Like, it's exactly bench warmers.
That's what we thought. We didn't know, like, when we did it, we never once brought up bench warmers, but everyone in the comments brought up bench warmers.
Right.
So we linked up with Notre Dame High School. Went and played some of their guys after their season.
That's where I went. Yeah,
I heard. Yeah, and so yeah, it was fun. We won. When you have
pretty epic. Well, I mean, yeah. If he's on the mound,
when you have really good pitch, this is one thing you learn about. If you knew nothing about baseball, I can say this much: if you have really good pitching, it will beat really good hitting any day.
Yeah,
and so mm-hmm. it makes it easier.
Yeah,
I only had to run around a little bit. But we made some good videos out of it.
You're just talking shit by that, and you're like, you're not going to hit him.
So. Yeah. No, exactly. Some kids put some good swings on, which mm-hmm. surprised him. And he knew that he needed to put, like, a couple balls in play to, like, hopefully the content would be better.
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah. No, it was great. So, lots of different styles of that stuff. But he focuses more on education mm-hmm. and that sort of thing.
I love it.
So, is the money-making part, you know, that many views? Is it more partnering with, you know, a company, you know, that owns Major League? Like, what's your revenue streams like?
The main one would be, you know, YouTube. It is, like, with ads and stuff, when it comes to sponsorships, mm-hmm. when it comes to a lot of that. When you're a media company, that generally tends to be it.
That's where it's fat.
Yeah. And then, obviously, it's merchandise, mm-hmm. it's products. One of the nice things is when you create it's one of the things I really enjoyed about coming into a media company mm-hmm. and just starting one through YouTube is it. If you were making donuts, to make more donuts,
I love that analogy. Yeah,
you'd have to hire more bakers, mm-hmm. right? And that, like, to the scale of if I'm making 100 donuts versus 1 million donuts, that's a lot more bakers.
Yeah,
and it's a lot more, say, land or just a bunch of things you have to buy. For YouTube now, it's you know, you get a couple more editors, you can pump out 3 or 4 more videos a week, mm-hmm. but subscribers consistently grow,
right?
And they don't really change; they don't mm-hmm. fluctuate. You know, the customers constantly come through, and you're always just trying to make them happy. So, it's a very sustainable business. It's a very you know, I do think there's a great future in it, especially obviously you don't own the platform that you're on, but mm-hmm. it's something that they do make it very advantageous for you. And brands see that. I think this is the future of digital marketing in general is linear TV doesn't really produce the same sort of views or the same sort of virality and kind of connection that other people have.
Right.
Like when you're sitting there watching TV and an ad pops up, you're like, you're predisposed to kind of shut your brain off. Whereas everyone looks at their phone before bed, generally. Mm-hmm. Everyone looks at their phone when they wake up, generally. They'll watch an ad. That's where they get a lot of their value from that.
Right.
And, you know, that's probably when it comes to the revenue side. Monetizing that's big. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Chet and Rachel are not really into their phones. My kids, they... Mm-hmm.
We're on social media. What are you talking about?
Well, okay. So you're saying...
it's not relevant at all.
Okay, hold on. So are you saying Rachel always looks at her phone and she's really into social media?
She uses her phone a lot, yeah.
No, she doesn't. She's hard to get
a hold
of.
Every day is considered a lot.
Well, I can get a hold of her easy. What are you talking about?
I think she's just avoiding calls.
Okay, you'll meet John.
There's another whole subject we're getting into here.
You'll meet John, because John trains me and Rachel on Mondays and Wednesdays. And he'll like group text us. All right, are we on? And she doesn't respond. Mm-hmm. And then, like, in the morning,
she responds
like,
to me like.
I mean, I see her several times a week, but she's not a phone person. Yeah.
I truly wish I wasn't a phone person. I mean, the hard part is my work, my life is generally on.
I'm always on my phone.
It's pretty addictive.
They made it that way.
Yeah.
And that's the
hard
part.
They did a good job.
They did a very good job.
It's a necessary thing you have to use nowadays to compete.
Well, it's hard to even imagine it, you know, 15 years ago or 20 years ago before the smartphone. Like, I was alive then and I was doing business and I can't even think back to what it was like back then.
No. Well, I remember my dad had a beeper. My dad's a doctor.
Oh, I had a beeper.
And
surgeon.
Cardiovascular surgeon.
Surgeon.
Yep.
But he's also formerly in a band and he writes music.
He's a songwriter as well.
Very cool.
So multi-talented. Oh yeah. He was a songwriter for a band called Strange Advance back in the day in Canada. So
and he's moving here.
Okay. Yeah,
he's bringing his practice
here.
It'll be
fun.
Soon.
Hopefully.
We need a drummer. Does he drum? No.
he used to drum. That was his thing. Yeah. Self-taught.
Here we go.
We always have a drummer.
But when it comes to, I lost my train of thought. But
we're talking about trying not to use your phone too much. Yep, but nowadays, in today's digital world, you have to be on
the beepers. The damn beepers. How can I forget about the beepers? So my dad working all the time, would never see him. And so I'd be in the pool. I was a kid. I was 9, 10 years old. And I'd like force him in the pool. And so I went through like 5 or 6 beepers because I pushed the guy in the pool with his beepers all the time. So I'll never forget beepers unless I guess trying to talk about it.
But beepers were like $69. Phones were like a grand.
Rest in peace. Yeah. My dad passed away. That's also like a quiet little moment for him. He died on the same day as the Queen.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. But you mentioned beepers.
So they're going to be dating in the next life. That's fun.
Yeah.
Also a musician. So music is so huge. Rachel and Chet are musicians.
I've heard you.
Chet, Deep Chetty. He has a song being released on Friday with Rachel.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Right on.
New track. Yeah, I'm excited.
What's the song called?
Burn It Down.
Nice. Yeah.
Burn It Down.
Burn It Down.
I've been playing it live at all my sets, so it's finally time to put it out there.
Awesome.
You gotta shoot your shot.
Exactly. Yeah. That's one of my favorite parts about like getting to play live shows and like seeing which tracks are like have the best engagement, which ones are ready to be put out, which ones need a little more work.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, it's one of the best parts of playing live shows, that crowd feedback.
Oh yeah. 100%.
And Chet waited until he had enough originals till he was gonna get out there and he has a new manager and I'm not gonna say her name, but it's exciting.
Okay, you can say her name if you want to. You don't have to be
mysterious. Well, I don't know if you want to.
She likes the mystery.
Yeah. Shout out to Lizzie. She's dope.
There you go. Yeah, no, I mean, music's been, it's huge. Outside of sports, it's probably been the biggest thing for my life, considering that's what I grew up watching, like, my dad pursue his dreams when it comes to that. That's what he'd always talk about. He wouldn't always want to talk about medicine. Just kind of, that's his day job. And then the thing that he always is super passionate about is music. So that's how we got back into it, was he had a MySpace. He asked me to create him a MySpace.
MySpace.
Yeah. And so he's like, yeah, I want to create my, or like do something. So we made him a MySpace and we made it like Hits Without Artists. That's what his name of it. And so we connected with like a guy in Nashville and a few other guys throughout. And so that's how he's been building his songwriting kind of business outside of that. Just had his first song officially released on like this new album they put out, which is pretty
cool.
Yeah.
What's it called?
We got to introduce him to Sean.
Yeah.
Because Sean's been buying and selling songs.
Yes, he has.
So the The band is Strange Advance. They just released their fourth album, which you're the best 80s kind of Canadian hair band possible.
Love it.
I think the song is Face with Gray Eyes.
Okay.
I think that's it.
Eyes Without a Face?
No.
Oh.
No.
Eyes Without a Face. No, yeah. I love that song.
We could play it later, though. Yeah, it's on iTunes, which is great. Yeah. I love, like, it's always fun being able to see that with my dad. But
so wait, is it his song or is it a song?
He wrote it.
Oh, he wrote this? Yeah, okay.
And they sang over it and did the whole thing. My dad, singing-wise, I've heard it way too much. Kind of sounds like Stewie from Family Guy singing. So, I mean, love the guy to death, but he definitely shouldn't be the one singing it.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Leave him on the drums.
Oh, yeah. But the songs he writes are great. So,
yeah. So he writes the songs, and he plays the
drums. What's your favorite part of music? Are you a musician? Do you just like to go and watch music? What's your relationship with it?
My biggest thing is, you know, I do think the composing of a song's pretty cool. I used to listen to like movie scores before games when I play, which everyone always like.
Movie scores? No,
they're inspiring.
Yeah, like superhero stuff.
Yeah.
Gladiator, like all the different stuff. I'd be listening to that in my headphones. People are like, what are you listening to? And I wouldn't tell them because they'd be like, oh, I'm listening to a rap song or whatever, right? So I listen to everything. But that would be, you know, the composing stuff's always big. Hans Zimmer's like a big. I was about to say
a bunch of Christopher Nolan movies have crazy soundtracks.
Oh, yeah.
Hans Zimmer does most of them.
He's amazing.
Oh, yeah. I used to watch movies, like before we had iPhones, I used to put Gladiator on before a game and I'd be sitting there watching it.
I love that movie.
Yeah. So a lot of that stuff, you know, obviously the songwriting stuff. I helped my dad write a song early on, which was fun when I was a kid. It made it on like a little radio show contest. So we listened to that.
What style is
it? What genre? He generally writes country now. But he'll do a bunch of other stuff. You know, he'll do R&B stuff. He'll, like, when it comes to different varieties, he'll play around with a bunch of stuff. But the biggest thing for me is I saw a guy who had a dream. He had to make a decision between, you know, med school or being in the band. Did med school. Made a great career of it. It
sounds like he did both, though, because if he kept his music passion alive on the side, he didn't let it go away. That's awesome.
Yeah. And this has been the fun part with, you know, with the internet's growth and with social media and all this. It made the world so small that it's much easier to develop this sort of thing later in life as well, like, or at least he could pursue this passion later. And so that's the cool thing now is he's starting to get closer to retirement or like semi-retirement. Like, he'll start focusing more on that stuff. So I'd say that's the biggest part for music for me. It's not, it's just I learned how to have a dream from watching my dad do that. But there's other pieces.
So your dad does the country music. Is it more like Johnny Cash or is it more like Dierks Bentley?
I'd say it's more like Dierks Bentley, Keith Urban-y, kind of like poppy.
Okay.
One of the things I've always talked to him about is like consumability. Like he's got a good vocabulary and he always throws some, like, I've never heard anyone say Litany of Heartache in a song before. Like,
Litany
of Heartache. How many people know the word litany?
That's the doctor coming out.
And so he's like, I'm sitting there like, Dad, I like the song, but no one my age is going to know what that word means.
So he needs to write another song that says called Go Get a Dictionary.
Yeah, exactly.
See, that's funny because as my kids are writing their music and collaborating on songs, I will come up with some words or some lyrics that I think would work, and I throw in something like salacious or ubiquitous.
No, yeah, you just have like two vocab words like that you keep parroting and misusing. Not actually comprehending.
But that's always been the biggest thing there. It's just, okay, let's simplify the text on that one. Yeah.
So do you have a team in the MLB that's like the team you root for, or do you mostly just root for friends when you're seeing them play?
Now it's just friends. You know, I would say if there's a team that I'm probably the most connected to, it'd be the Blue Jays. They gave me the most opportunities.
Really?
They're very much connected to the guy who convinced me to play baseball. His name's Lloyd Mosby, played for the Blue Jays for 10, 15 years. Like they would still, even when I was hurt, they still gave me a shot. They still were trying to sign me, still doing all that. So I'd probably be a little more emotionally connected to them. But outside of that, it's just all friends.
Chet, you've been to the Blue Jays. Do you remember watching a game in Toronto?
Oh, yeah. That's one of the stadiums I've been to. It's on my bucket list to go to every major league stadium. Oh, cool. So it's cool that one is crossed off the list.
It's a hard one to go to.
It's like right at the base of the CN Tower. So it's so cool. You can like see it from the CN Tower, too.
So playing there is what really changed my career. So basically, being a track athlete in high school and trying to become a baseball player was a very kind of concentrated thing that I had to do. And so it led me to kind of where I'm at now, where I had to read a bunch of stuff, had to learn how to kind of become a baseball player as fast as possible.
How quickly did you do that?
It took, I would say, 2.5-3 years to actually become legit. at least someone that people were paying attention to. And I'd say this, I did this thing called T12, which was put on by Roberto Alomar. And it's kind of like, they had it actually here.
What is T12? I don't know.
So T12, it's basically like the AFLAC All-American game, or they actually just had it out here at Diamondback Stadium, where they had all the perfect game All-American guys come through. And so it was like that, except we were there for 2.5 weeks playing against the top players out of Canada. So I was on Team BC, which was the province I was from, which no one knew me because I hadn't been in the country for a long time.
Right.
So it's kind of like a ghost. But they're like, no one you guys would know. There's a guy named Mike Soroka, who's from Calgary. He's a major leaguer. Josh Naylor, he's a major leaguer. These were all the guys that I was there with. And I performed really well. And so that put me kind of on this new kind of level.
What position were you at the time?
I was an outfielder.
Okay, cool.
And that was the first, I'd say the first 2 years of my career as a baseball player, like serious, it was trying to figure out what position I was best at. So usually in baseball, best athlete gets thrown out at shortstop. They just like, hey, do what you can. So that's what I did. I went to college. The starting shortstop at my school was a senior. I was going to take his job. I took the senior at third baseman's job instead. So I became a third baseman. Then I kept growing. I got to college at about 6 foot, like 160. I left at 6'4", 220. Nice. So I had some time to grow. And then once the outfield kind of became an option, basically in between sophomore and junior year, I went to summer ball in California, and I told that coach that I'm an outfielder. He's like, oh, I have you down as a third baseman. I'm like, no, I'm outfielder. So I called my coach. I'm like, I'm not going to come back to school if I've not made an outfielder. Like, I just can't play anymore. Like, it became hard as I grew. I also had I was one of those guys that if I got the ball and I had too much time to throw, I just throw it away. So I needed more distance to throw. So that became – basically, once I became an outfielder, that really changed everything. I could throw really hard. I could run really fast. I could hit the ball a long way.
Those comes to an important point that you need to know your strengths.
Yeah. Yep. That was the biggest thing. And, you know, I'd say that's one of the things that when it comes to youth sports, I think people are too hasty to kind of count guys out. And that's partially why we've built what we've built, is I wanted to create something that would make it easier for someone in my position to validate their worth. Like, I had a lot of people stand in my corner and be like, he's actually a good player. Like, I know he doesn't have the typical background, but he's a good player. If I didn't have that, I wouldn't have gotten anywhere. So I wanted to create the ability, whether it be, you know, through data, through media, creating different videos to support that. That was generally why we've started really focusing on influencer media and also the data side. I want people to present to the world in a consumable way that they are good at the game, and then also present to their possible employers that they're good in the game. And that's where the data comes in.
Well, I think it's really brilliant, because sometimes it can be political. With, you know, maybe in high school, where maybe that coach, maybe his son's on the team and he plays his son's friends.
Sure.
Can it be political?
Oh, 100%. And that's, they used to call it daddy ball. They used to do a lot of that stuff. Daddy ball. And for me, you know, I went to a really good, so I went to like the Notre Dame prep equivalent in Northern California. Jesuit high school.
He was the Catholic one
too. And when it comes to sports and high school sports, they're just a powerhouse. Like, rugby team was...
Yeah, I've heard of it before. They're always in the power rankings nationally.
Nationally, baseball team's great. Had a bunch of major leaguers come out of there. Soccer team's ranked nationally. Track team, like, we won a state championship. There's a bunch of stuff like that. And, you know, when you go there, my original thought was I was going to play basketball. I was also 5'5". And so I'm just getting thrown around by these guys that are 6 foot point guards, right?
Right.
So I'm like, okay.
Chip still plays basketball. He loves basketball.
I'm still super, like... I don't think there's any game I enjoy playing more than basketball.
Hooping is so fun.
He does it all the
time. It's great. And, like, I've hit a home run. I've dunked a ball. They're both really cool. I enjoy dunking a lot. Like,
right.
Hitting a home run, I'd say this probably, I really grew to love hitting a home run. But so, yeah, high school, kind of that whole process. But the political side of it, you definitely see it. You have boosters. You know, the school that I went to, you'd have – they'd know who you are even before you got to the school. So you have a lot of parents coming through, a lot of really involved parents. My parents, it's one of the best things that they ever did for me, was they were involved to the point that they were like, fuel my passion, but they were kind of like, okay, it's your thing. And I asked them for that. I learned that a lot.
That's a Chet head. I mean, Chet was very self-driven. He's always been self-driven. Yeah. In fact, at one point, your dad said...
Well, it's really important.
Yeah, otherwise you're not going to actually be good at it. Yeah.
Chet set up his own appointment with... Randy Johnson had given a recommendation, I can't remember how you got Steven Ontiveros.
We just found him online.
I didn't find him. You found him. By yourself, he made the appointment. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, and long story short, I was all self-driven with my athletics as well. Mm-hmm. And that's how it has to be. Otherwise,
it's only real scale.
You're not going to be into it. Yeah.
And that's
same with Rachel.
That's the hardest part when you see young kids in today's game too. Like you see them try to, you know, the parents are very much pushing it and then they get burnt out.
Mm-hmm.
And
that only never happened with my kids.
Yeah. The only way that you can continue to push through it is if you learn why you're doing it.
Right.
Like you.
Right.
If you're doing it because you don't want to get in a fight with your dad. You don't love it that much. Yeah.
So just kind of go back to how you were saying you want the culture at the facility to be like people that are hungry, not just people that are there like for the wrong reasons.
Well, we've turned away major leaguers, long-term major leaguers. Mm-hmm. We've turned away people who are wanting to pay a lot of money to be there. Like, I don't need the money. We don't need that. Like, what we need is we need people who
Can we have some names? No, I'm just kidding.
Spill the dirt.
Yeah, give us the salacious names.
But the big thing for us is like, you know, the way we're heading and the way the game's heading, mm-hmm. like it needs to be driven by this.
Right.
You know, the political side of it, we want to make sure that, you know, no matter who you are, I don't care what side or what the way that you talk or anything, I want to make sure that you have the ability to present your value to the world as much mm-hmm. as possible. And I know I've been in environments that aren't conducive to those conversations.
Right.
I've been in environments that are. And so we're trying to move more towards the ones that are and really focus on that.
So you want more brilliance. You want more... people that are passionate mm-hmm. and they vibe with you.
Yeah. And there's a lack of judgment.
And your brand, okay. There's lack of judgment.
The big thing is, you know, come prepared, come passionate, come to the place that you are actually wanting to talk about it in a very transparent and kind of humble way, mm-hmm. like mm-hmm. that you can actually deliberate with people and come to some sort of agreement on where you want to head. And so that's, you know, when it comes to, obviously you have to have like-minded people driving towards the same direction, right. but you also want to have some ability to, for discourse. Mm-hmm. And that's really what we're kind of wanting to create.
So in a few years, where do you see the facility? Do you see like a lot of professional athletes in all different sports there and like potentially, you know, people in Hollywood, like musicians, those kind of people there using the facility too?
Sure.
And then what is like the application process like for people that want to work out there or use the facility?
Yeah, the biggest thing is
that's a good question.
I think we wanted to get to a point where everyone can see the value of it from a content standpoint. You know, this is the future of things where if you really want to grow, I mean, people see it on TikTok all the time. You can't monetize TikTok. Mm-hmm. It's very difficult to monetize Instagram. YouTube, you can monetize.
Right.
And that's where
I did not know that.
Yeah. And it's a very sustainable, like mm-hmm. I was talking about earlier, it's mm-hmm. very sustainable kind of business. And one thing,
how so? Can you give us? I mean, dumb it down.
Sure. The fact that subscribers generally, once you have them, they're there. Like you want to make sure. I mean, our whole goal is to entertain and to educate mm-hmm. and to empower the public that are watching our stuff. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we want to do it in a pretty informal way, and we want to do it in a way that we don't take ourselves too seriously.
I mean, is your name Momentum?
Momentum.
On YouTube? And how many followers do you guys have?
Just under 250,000 right now.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, the big thing for us is, you know, don't want to take ourselves too seriously. I'm wearing a shirt that says do cool shit on it. Like, that's really why we created this kind of slogan, is like, we want to do it in a really fun way. Mm-hmm. Specifically, baseball is very... I would say clean cut from the standpoint mm-hmm. they're afraid to ruffle feathers. We want to change that from a lot is lost in creativity, in mm-hmm. entertainment, in fun
right.
with that sort of thing. And they're not generally the most open to that sort of thing. So that's why we wanted to create it that way. But from a standpoint of, say, application of the facility, you know, I do want it to be a place where no matter what market you're in, you understand that content can help you grow mm-hmm. and the virality of different kinds of...
So content can help you grow, meaning putting more out there?
Yeah. And and from, you know, just even from awareness, accessibility, a lot of things. There's a lot of people. We just had a guy who was a world champion hurdler. His name's Jarrett Eaton. He came through, and he's wanting to do similar stuff in track. Mm-hmm. Like he sees that there's no, like, professional... There is professional track, but usually the money they make is strictly from sponsors.
Right.
So there's no... It's difficult. And so he mm-hmm. wants to find ways to change that. And there's like YouTube is a great way of doing that mm-hmm. just because you create, you know, content for people to consume. They start, you grow off of their passion for the sport and you grow off of your ability to educate those people that are in there through your expertise. So he's been there, done that. He knows what's right, what's wrong for him. So he can actually present that in a consumable way to a 15-year-old who might mm-hmm. be a hurdler, the next up and coming hurdler.
Right.
And so that's really, you know, from the content standpoint, who comes to the facility.
So Chet's friend, yeah. Devin Allen, went to, in the last Olympics, he was fifth in the world. But I know he's going again to try to do gold.
I know he was on the Eagles practice squad. He got signed to the Eagles. I think he's still with them right now. So
good friend of his. Yeah.
Oh, sweet.
And Rachel went to prom and Christmas dance, whatever, with him. Yeah. And they were only friends, though.
No.
So. She didn't go to prom with him. That's not true.
What dance? The Christmas dance. Where was Christmas
dance? She never went to a dance with him.
She did.
Just making shit up. No, she was just friends of them. They're track teammates.
Okay, I'll prove you wrong.
Okay.
Oh, but he's around pictures, here?
They went to the dance.
Yeah, he went to Brophy. Okay. So kind of like the all boys version of Notre Dame prep.
Okay, Chip, what do you want to bet that they went to a dance together?
I already know they didn't. So okay, you're just fabricating things in your mind right now.
I'll bet you $1,000.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I'll bet you $100 right now.
I don't need to embarrass you any further.
After the show, I'm going to show pictures of them at the dance. I hosted it. Chip wasn't there. Okay, $100.
That's funny. No, it's okay.
You heard it here, folks.
But yeah, Devin is a great dude, you know, and as humble as an athlete could get, mm-hmm. you know, great guy. Mm-hmm. So.
And he convinced Rachel to hurdle because mm-hmm. she was only sprinting.
Gotcha.
And then he's like, you know, you'd be really good at hurdling. And he kind of taught her and then showed her.
Track athletes, it made me into the athlete. I would say it made me into the athlete I am.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the biggest thing for me when I got to baseball. People didn't care how much when I actually got to the point of people thinking, oh, he had the talent to be a professional athlete. It was because I had the raw tools.
Mm-hmm.
And so we always talk about, is it a bad thing to specialize early on? You know, you have a lot of kids that all they do is play baseball.
Right.
I played every sport possible. And, you know, in many ways.
So did both my kids. They did three sports each, varsity. Yeah.
We're starting to understand, like, okay, you know, in some ways there's certain phases of life where you allow the late bloomers to actually figure out what that is. So I mm-hmm. didn't put muscle on until I was like 22, like legit, like mm-hmm. actually feel strong. I'm probably stronger now than I've ever been. It's like,
what's your routine? What do you do to work out?
I listen to what Tim tells me to do. That's my routine. He puts us through. We have a facility workout every day,
mm-hmm.
which
it's how many people do it?
Seven. All the people that generally I wanted to create an environment where everyone was generally wanting to work out if they wanted to
mm-hmm.
or going to work out if they wanted to. So Tim, it's one of the things he does out of the kindness of his heart. He puts us all through it. Some people, they enjoy the game.
Is he a trainer?
Yep. So he's the director of athletic performance for FORAP. And so he's the one that puts all the athletes when they come through and train. We have 18 to 20 guys this offseason coming through.
Mm-hmm.
He does all the physiological tracking, all that stuff from educating them. But he also puts them through their workouts. So he's worked with NFL guys, MLB guys, basketball guys. So every day around 4, hopefully I can make it today. We'll see how that goes. He puts us through a workout, tells us when to take our supplements, tells us when to do sauna stuff. The three of us do the sauna on Wednesdays. It's a tiny little sauna, so we get to know each other pretty well.
Is that the...
The tiny little one?
You guys all get in there
together? Three of us, yeah. Luckily, like, Kevin's like, he's gotten way bigger.
That's funny.
Yeah, we all fit in there. And then we put the TV on and watch Hard Knocks. But yeah, so when it comes to development, that's our biggest kind of thing is you want to, you know, develop as much athleticism and mm-hmm. elasticity as possible when you're young. And then there comes a point where you're like 16, 17, 18 years old where you can actually start putting on some muscle. So get in the weight room. Like, you'll remember some of the muscle memory from then as you continue. Obviously, you'll still be playing the game, the sport, but put that strength on. And then you kind of, once you get to the point where you're, you know, strong enough, athletic enough, and coordinated enough to kind of keep that together, maintain.
Mm-hmm.
Do the right things to make sure that you stay there. We talked about being a proactive versus a reactive athlete. So being a proactive athlete is focusing on your hydration, your nutrition, you know, a lot of the blood testing, all this other stuff, and being ahead of what's coming. Whereas for me, my career ended abruptly due to injury.
Mm-hmm.
Probably because I just pushed it too hard and mm-hmm. I did too much.
And you weren't proactive, right?
What was the injury that caused you?
I tore my labrum. And so I've had two surgeries.
I had a partial tear in my labrum. That's like why I didn't end up playing in college. So injury.
It's very limiting. It's, you know, the injury initially stemmed from basketball, but then it kind of progressed into I was sliding headfirst into second, stealing a bag, trying to impress nobody. But I'm trying. This is one of the things where, like, in my mind, I'm doing everything right. I'm in this backfield in California that nobody's watching, playing my ass off, and a shortstop lands on my shoulder and pops it out. And I'm like, okay, I didn't even know it was that big of a deal. And then I play a few more years in college, and then basically I come back my senior year, and all of a sudden it starts popping out when I have all these scouts and like cross checkers and all these people there. I'm like, okay, of course, life is life. I had to start learning about that, where timing is a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's, you know,
when good things come out of bad things. What would you say good came out of your unfortunate
everything I do today, I thought about while I was recovering from surgery. A lot of, I almost went into the Canadian military after surgery. I almost did a lot of stuff that, you know, I wanted to come back and do what I could in the game because of all the things that I thought of and the hardships that I went through in that. And it's, I've been very lucky that I've had a lot of people support me along the way. I learned from a lot of smart people at Driveline when I'm there. Mm-hmm. There's still a lot of really smart people there. The things that we were pushing for early on, that's something that I keep with me every day, where it's like the never being complacent with where we are, never think you figured it out. It's one
meaning
of the,
always improving.
Yeah. Like, it's one of the hard things in public business that you like, if you present to the public, like, nah, I don't have it all figured out. Like, I'm providing you a service. Yeah, like, you have to kind of say, like, oh, I know, I'm the expert. And that's hard to sell if you don't do it that way. But in media, I don't have to sell that.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to 4App, we have some things that we know help, but we want to empower the athletes to get to the point that we are. And we want to really make these athletes learn a little bit more along the way. And so that's the thing for me, what I learned from the injuries itself. You know, I was a young athlete pushing it too hard. I was doing double days in the gym, going to school. It made it a bit more difficult to, you know, you're burning the candle at both ends.
Mm-hmm.
And that probably made me more prone to injuries. I could have done it smarter. And so that's where we're wanting to make these athletes a bit more educated on that and more resilient. So, mm-hmm.
So Chet was recruited and scouted and ended up going to Cal Poly, but then you got injured, what, your freshman year?
I just talked about that I got hurt and didn't end up playing. Yeah.
So, so same thing.
No, absolutely. And it's, you know, the two surgeries, I've learned a lot. I went through a lot after the first one. I still had pre-draft workouts lined up afterwards that I was pushing really hard for. I went through withdrawals off of painkillers after the first one. I didn't know that was a thing. First time I ever had to deal with like legit anxiety. I didn't sleep for like 4 or 5 days. Like I went through the whole.
Damn, that's terrifying.
It's, I wouldn't wish that on anybody. Mm-hmm. And it's, I mean, it was a wicked few days. Mm-hmm. I learned a lot. I mean, I think about it all the time because I became like, you know, I accepted like I might be losing it. Mm-hmm. I accepted that if this is the way I go, here I go. Like there's a lot of conversations I have with myself at 2 a.m. on day 5.
Right.
I'm sitting like, oh my God.
It makes you wonder if you're like over prescribed or if those kind of drugs should even be prescribed. Like, because cannabis can be a decent pain relief. Like there's other options that don't make you go through those level of withdrawals.
I went through
I'm glad you brought that up. How do you feel about cannabis for healing or
I personally have never, I've never done, like usually now when it comes to, I stay away from literally everything. Mm-hmm. I might take an ibuprofen every so often. My fiance every so often, I'm just like, hey, take a Tylenol. I'm just like, not even, I'm just like, yeah, get me ice and I'll just sit here and kind of work through it. My big thing was.
So are you against cannabis?
No. I think if it works for you, go right ahead. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's one of the things I know, you know, my dad's dad went through a lot of pain before he died. It's something that was prescribed, or it wasn't prescribed for him, but it would have helped him very, like a lot. He had phantom pain because he cut his fingers off when he was building his house. And so that was something that was hurting him constantly. Mm-hmm. And I know before, like on his way, before he died.
What's phantom pain?
It's basically when, say, if I was to get my leg cut off and I don't have the last part of my leg, you'd still feel pain in your toes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Phantom
Seriously?
Limb pain. Yeah. And so he'd have that in his hands. And that was something that was really uncomfortable for him. And my dad was like, you know, if it's something that helps him, go right ahead. You know, it wasn't legal at the time in Canada. It was something my OPA passed before that became legal. If you needed, go right ahead. I mean,
there's so many people in that position where it's a way better option than opioids or those really extreme painkillers. And it would, you know, be a great symptom reliever.
It's all within reason. Like, that's the biggest thing, you know, if as long as you're being smart about it. And I think that's the biggest thing for me is I didn't know any better after my first surgery. They told me, like, we want you to be sedentary. We want you to literally just sit. They called, like, we'd like you to be snowed. I'm just sitting there like, okay. And so I went through that. I watched a lot of TV, ate a lot of Chinese dumplings, and that's what I was craving.
And that's what's so sad is that a lot of people don't have your level of discipline to fight through those withdrawal symptoms. A lot of people break down and then go to a dealer and get something else that's going
to
scratch that itch.
I appreciate the – I don't even know if I had the insight into thinking that – I thought I was losing my mind.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because I just kind of I didn't like who I was being, mm-hmm. like, while I was on it. And so I just quit cold turkey. And it was funny. Like, my sister was still there. She was getting ready to go back to school. She was kind of like pre-med track and all this stuff. And my parents are kind of getting a little concerned. Like, we don't know what's going on. And she's like, I think he's just going through withdrawals. So we go to dinner. I have like a Long Island iced tea with my family and then just instantly felt better.
Mm.
So it needed just some sort of depressant to cut it out. But I did learn those few days are pretty
kind of intense. Oh, yeah. Intense.
We all have something like that, I guess. Yeah. But yeah, but the second surgery, I had nothing. I didn't have any painkillers after that. For that reason, mm-hmm. I was pretty kind of cautious. You're
dead. Like, yeah.
Scared you away from them. You're like, not again.
No, but those injuries, I mean, I wouldn't change anything. Mm-hmm. I would say I'm more kind of influential in the game now than I probably would have been if I was a minor league baseball player.
Right.
I definitely think about things differently.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say my passion for – I'm not jaded by the system. I feel like I can make a change mm-hmm. in it.
Oh,
whereas if I would have gone, played 5-6 years and got churned mm-hmm. out just like a bunch of my buddies, maybe I'd be selling insurance or something. Right. Not to
– Speaking of jaded insurance. With the system,
yep.
let's circle all the way back
we
to
have
the beginning
four minutes
of the show. We got about 4 minutes.
Easy enough.
Because you're trying to make a difference.
Well, I wanted to ask one question.
All right, go ahead.
Like, when should players know when it's time to – Like, they're not going to go all the way to the majors, and they're like, I've been in the minors for a few leagues. When should someone try to figure out it's time to move on to the next thing? Because it can be really hard to give the game up.
Yeah. Obviously, it's a case-by-case basis. Yeah. If you still have the itch to pursue it, you know, this is the thing my dad said to me. You're young. You're only going to be young once.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're smart. You'll hopefully keep, like, as long as things go the way they are, your brain's going to be fine. So continue on. You'll always be able to use that. I was lucky enough. I was good in school. Like, folks on a lot of that stuff. But I would say it's definitely case by case.
So if you're still hungry for it, basically. Because if you're not hungry for it anymore, then those people that are going to beat you out. Simple as
every
that.
Time,
it's just like anything, you know, to make sacrifices, you have to have a justification mm-hmm. for why you're making those sacrifices. So for the longest time, I didn't have relationships. Mm-hmm. I was very much just an individual person pursuing my baseball. Then it became clear as I got older and things started to settle down. Now I can get married, have a relationship, things like that. And that's, you have to have a reason for those sacrifices. I knew I still had the itch to play. I still had the ability to play. I made those sacrifices. So I think that would be the main thing is just know what is right for you at the time and what you're wanting to pursue. And if it's not, go right ahead. No one's going to hold against you. And if it is, keep going.
Love it. All right.
So what's on your bucket list?
Mine?
Yeah.
Oof. That's a big list.
Yeah.
Hey, one thing. Name five things.
I want to go to an F1 race in Monaco.
Oh, that'd
okay.
Be fun.
I just threw a random one out there.
That's a great one, though.
That's a great one.
Yeah.
All right. So back to the beginning of the show. We've only got a couple of minutes.
Yep.
Biggest differences between the United States and Canada.
Mm.
Maybe top two.
Transparency of problems going on.
Okay.
The United States, like, it's the most talked about, I would say, covered country. If you want to separate them into characters in the mm-hmm. world, the United States is at the figure. Like, everyone's talking about the United States.
Why is America better?
I'll explain it.
You already told me.
You generally, you know, I personally, when it comes to, I would not have been able to achieve what I have so far anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
American dream.
The American dream. You know, it's something I came here not knowing what I wanted to do. My parents brought us here not knowing. They just knew that where we were wasn't the right place. Right. So moved their entire family here. And so that's, you know,
it's awesome that you appreciate that because nowadays so many people are like Debbie Downers mm-hmm. and they try to claim that the American dream is dead. But in reality, they're just addicted to their phones, spending all their time on there, not actually starting a business or learning a skill that you could market.
You talk to any immigrant that has gone about it the right mm-hmm. way and has invested a lot of time and money into coming here and understanding what it's done. Mm-hmm. They will extremely significantly they'll plant their flag. This is the best country in the world.
Absolutely.
Yeah, if you want it bad enough,
hustle.
If you want it bad enough, you will find a way and you'll keep evolving until you find a way to make it. If you want it bad enough.
So here in America, we can all achieve our dreams. And we're saving the planet
one show at a time. You can achieve your dreams if you're willing to work for them, though. It's not going to happen if you just sit back and want it.
Yep. If people want to find more about you, want to find your YouTube channel, where do they go?
Yep. So it's Watch Momentum on YouTube.
Watch Momentum.
Yep. And then same social handles. I think it's Watch_Momentum. Then mine's all Tosher, T-O-S-H-E-R. But yeah, that's the best place to find us is on YouTube. All right. Watch Momentum.
Awesome. Well, everybody, check out YouTube. Also, check out inthegreenroom.green. Deep Chetty, and yes, is more fun.
Saving the planet one show at a time.
Cheers, everybody.
We'll have them on again.
Great. Thank you, guys.
Love it.